We love the name Blues Broads. You know, it's really got a lot of attitude. So what genius came up with that one?
Actually, that was my husband, Bob Brown.
Oh, there you go.
Hello again, and thanks for tuning in.
Online dating has dramatically changed the way folks look for a mate. But is there too much info out there and too many possibilities?
Popping a pill may not be the best approach for treating every ailment. We'll get advice from a holistic doctor.
And ladies, are you stressed out, moody, have no interest in sex, and are wiping off the sweat in the middle of January? A renowned gynecologist shares how to adjust your hormones naturally.
Plus, shoot the breeze with the babes. Gone are the days when online dating was thought to be only for the desperate and lonely. Now, one-third of America's 90 million singles are looking for love online.
That's a whole lot of people searching for the perfect mate. It must be really competitive out there.
So to meet the demand, there are dating sites for just about everyone. Those already married, those looking to meet their dream inmate, to sea captains searching for a first mate. They're all hoping the next best date is only a mouse click away.
Journalist Dan Slater explores the growth of this phenomenon in his book, Love in the Time of Algorithms. He takes us behind the scenes of the booming online dating business, how it affects the way we love, and what we've come to expect from these relationships. Dan joins us on the phone from Connecticut. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Boomer Babes, for having me.
I always thought of online dating as a relatively new thing, but apparently your parents met through a computer dating service way back in the 60s, so how did that happen?
It's sort of bizarre. You know, my mom and dad met through a computer dating service back in 1965, and, you know, back then they did not have the internet. There was not the online world. They just had these enormous computers, so you'd fill out a questionnaire. You'd slide the questionnaire through these really large machines, then it would spit out your matches. And obviously, there were no photos to go with it. So you had to kind of, you know, throw the caution to the wind, so to speak.
And maybe there's no disappointment because you can't lie about, you know, if you're 5'0" and you're balding, you know, it's...
That's it. Yeah, you actually have to go and see the person.
Well, so. Because of how your parents met, did that sort of pique your curiosity about 21st century dating?
It did, you know, a little bit. I'd say the main reason I wrote the book is just because I happened to be single a few years back when I was around 30 years old, and I started doing online dating for the first time, and I saw that you know, this was a very new world of kind of thinking about relationships. When I started to call around to my friends who lived in, you know, various areas of the country, they also kind of reported to me very interesting stories about their own experiences. So that sort of made me want to figure out how everyone was using online dating now.
Well, was your online dating successful?
I think it was a success. I met a lot of wonderful people. I met one person who I had about a year-long relationship with, and I thought it was a really, really, you know, nice way to meet. And, you know, it was a good thing to kind of, you know, to pair that with meeting people offline as well.
When did the modern online dating era really begin?
Probably in the mid-90s with Match.com. The internet started, as you know, in sort of, you know, the early 90s is when the internet went mainstream, and Match arrived a few years later. As far as sort of the really large online dating population that we have today, that really didn't exist up until a few years ago. I mean, now almost a third of the single people in America have an online dating profile, which is sort of amazing. But that, I don't think, was the case up until about 2009.
Well, how have dating sites changed since the 90s?
They've probably become more efficient. I think when the populations become larger, you know, you just have more to work with. The chances that you're going to log on and find someone who kind of meets what you're looking for, you know, it's not a surefire thing by any means. I met lots of people in the course of reporting my book who were very, you know, unhappy with online dating. But for the most part, I think if you stick with it and if you try to climb the learning curve, you know, you can now have a pretty good shot at finding someone.
You know, that statistic of one-third of America's 90 million singles are going online to look for love, I found really surprising. So why do you think so many people are flocking to online dating sites these days, besides the sophisticated technology? What is it about singles these days?
I think there are so many sociological factors. It's hard to pin down one. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think for sort of, you know, older folks, I think, you know, as you sort of age a bit, your social circle begins to shrink a little, and it becomes harder to find social outlets in order to, you know, to meet new folks. And sort of, I think online dating is, in a sense, kind of an antidote to that. It kind of helps re-expand your social life a little bit. So I think it can be very useful. And I also think for even those who are a little bit younger, you know, with, you know, things like, you know, feminism, for instance, now women are working longer and they're devoting more time to you know, that, and maybe waiting a bit longer to find a relationship. And when they do finally hit the point where they're interested in getting married, maybe they don't have as much time to wait around anymore. So they don't want to, you know, rely on just going to bars and hoping someone's going to pop up. Now they have a tool that they can use. So I think it's become useful.
But, you know, Kathy and I have girls, and they're both in their young 20s, and mm-hmm. so many of their friends are on these online dating services. And that's surprising, because I guess when we were younger, way back then, nobody would have thought it. We just met through other people.
Sure.
So it seems like things are really changing.
Well, you know, they, you know, your daughters were really raised on a lot of this stuff. So I think part of it is also that they don't see it as extreme. As, you know, I'm 35, so I'm at least old enough to remember a time when we thought about dating without the influence of technology at all. So even for me, it was a bit of, you know, a transition. But if you had a Facebook profile by the time you were 10, maybe it doesn't seem so extreme.
Well, how accurate are these dating sites in predicting love or predicting the right match?
I think they're getting a lot better. I don't think that they can predict your soulmate. I think they can do maybe something short of that, which is to try to predict whether you can hit it off with someone on a first date. And I think over time, they might even improve, but I think that's the stage we're at the moment.
We're talking about the mainstreaming of online dating and how technology has changed the way we look for love. Our guest is Dan Slater. He's the author of Love in the Time of Algorithms. Dan, we were talking about how accurate these dating sites are in predicting love, but what about, as you were saying, these intangibles like compatibility or even chemistry? How do you predict that?
Well, there isn't, you know, obviously isn't a formula for, you know, for that. You know, you need to focus on the tangible in order to maybe get to the intangible. So what we're seeing now with a lot of dating sites is they're just asking people extraordinarily large sets of questions about very, very personal aspects of their life, with this idea that the further you probe into someone's private world and the more information about them you extract, the better you'll be able to do it matching up with someone. So, for instance, on a site like OkCupid, you now have the option to answer thousands and thousands of questions about yourself, and the person that you're meeting will have also answered thousands and thousands of questions, and you'll be, you know, being matched up theoretically based on a ton of information.
I am so glad I'm not single, because I wouldn't have time to do all that.
I wouldn't have the patience to fill out the questionnaire.
It's time-consuming, and that's a big complaint. But, you know, I think even if you want to find someone offline, that's also going to be time-consuming, you know, potentially. So I think that finding a mate, finding someone that you're happy with, is one of life's major projects. And for all of those but the very, very luckiest, it's probably going to take a little work, you know.
Well, how do they know, these sites? I'm very curious, that people are telling the truth.
There was a study done a few years ago where they actually found that the amount of line is not as high as you'd think. So, yeah, you know, men will on average add a couple inches to their height. Women will on average shave 5 to 10 pounds off their weight. But, you know, overall, the profiles are fairly honest.
Because I know a lot of people that have done this, and a lot of times they're so disappointed when they see the person physically.
You need to adjust your expectations. I think that a part of that is also the technology and the way that it's sort of messing with relationships. And this is one of the subjects that I tried to tackle, you know, inside the book, which is what happens to your expectations when you are receiving all this information about someone before you actually see them or before you actually meet them. And I think that what happens for a lot of folks is that they have all this time to sort of invent a fantasy about who this person is. And they fill in the blanks. They fill in what they don't know with what they sort of wish were true about this person. And then when you finally meet them, you have to kind of adjust. And sometimes if the adjustment is a radical one, it can be kind of jarring.
Well, let me ask you again about the baby boomers. And we know that they're turning to dating sites, you know, as much as these
younger...
One of
the best demographics. Yeah.
Exactly. So often, though, they're looking at their second or third or maybe fourth or fifth relationship. Does age and experience make boomers any more successful in finding a match online?
My sort of anecdotal evidence based on a fair amount of reporting is absolutely yes. I think experience is everything. I think that the older folks I spoke with who are in the online dating world, they were just a lot more kind of realistic. They had a much more solid idea of what they really needed from a relationship, you know, because as you say, they had already been around the bases a few times. And I think that can be very, very important for people.
Now, can you recommend any really good dating websites for boomers out there that you think
are
pretty accurate?
A lot of them, Match.com recently, or not too recently, this was about 2 or 3 years ago, launched a site called Our Time. And Our Time is, from what I've heard, a very, very effective site.
Well, we hear,
for the over 50 crowd.
We hear a new one, How About We?
How About We is a great site.
Yeah, it's gaining a lot of attention.
It is. And it's a site that is based on first date sort of ideas. So you throw out an idea to the site. You say, you know, how about we take a ferry ride, or how about we go sample, you know, margaritas at a bunch of Mexican restaurants or something, and then somebody responds, you know, to the idea rather than just to a profile.
So you got
to
be really,
that, you know, to break the ice a little bit.
Right. So you got to be really creative.
Yeah, I think it puts emphasis, you know, and even if you don't actually go and sample margaritas at every Mexican restaurant, you know, at least you've had the chance to show your creativity, and maybe it just ends up as a drink or a walk in the park.
Well, real quickly, Dan, is there a downside to online dating?
One of the downsides is, you know, for instance, that there can be issues with safety. But I think a bigger one is that it can make people a little bit confused. I think that we have never in history had this much, you know, these many options in dating, and we are now exposed to these enormous dating pools that we have never had. And I think that if you are prone to have, say, you know, a commitment issue, say you're a younger man or woman and you don't know, you're not certain whether you want, you know, a long-term relationship, I think that online dating can sort of inflame some of those, you know, doubts, and that may potentially be a downside.
Dan Slater, author of Love and the Time of Algorithms, fascinating stuff. Thanks so much for this conversation, but I got to tell you, we boomer babes are really happy we're off the market.
Thank you, Barb and Kathy. I appreciate being on the show.
Up next, what the drug companies won't tell us, the latest on natural medicine. We'll be right back after the break. Support comes from Accent on Travel Rehoboth Beach with a Viking Rhine River cruise with us, the two boomer babes. For questions and reservations, 302-703-6154.
Bailey Chase offers a lifestyle of flexibility and choice that provides you new opportunities to experience your independence and enrich your life. For more information about the lifestyle Bailey Chase offers, visit www.integrace.org. Equal housing opportunity.
When we have a physical ailment, we typically pop a pill for the cure. But Dr. Michael Murray believes that over-the-counter and prescription medications can make the problem worse and do nothing to heal the underlying condition. He's a leading authority on natural medicine.
He explains all in his new book, What the Drug Companies Won't Tell You and Your Doctor Doesn't Know. Dr. Murray, an advocate of natural medicine, joins us on the phone from Arizona. Welcome to the show.
My pleasure.
Now, we've been raised to think that just popping a pill is the best approach for treating an ailment or a disease. But you, however, suggest that we really should look to holistic treatments instead of traditional medicine whenever possible. And that, you know, we shouldn't just rely on drugs as a first line of defense. Why is that?
Well, many times drugs are just biochemical band-aids that kind of cover up the symptoms but don't address the underlying issue. And as a result, many times they actually make the disease worse in the long term, and other times these drugs have very significant side effects. If we just look at arthritis, for example, the major form of arthritis is osteoarthritis. In this form, the cartilage starts to degenerate. The drugs work to reduce pain and inflammation, but these drugs, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like aspirin, ibuprofen, and Celebrex, they also impair the body's ability to manufacture cartilage. So in the long term, they are simply suppressing the symptoms but actually progressing the disease process. So it's really an irrational approach to dealing with this condition. And when we look at every major classification of drugs, we see the same sort of problem pop up over and over again.
So what do you recommend for treating arthritis?
Well, what we have to do is we have to give the body the tools it needs to heal itself. And the cartilage cell is designed to last a lifetime. And if we nourish that cartilage cell with nutrition and with the right dietary supplements, we can help rebuild that cartilage. There have been very good studies with glucosamine sulfate, for example, and it's a very popular dietary supplement. I think it's a much more rational approach. But our cartilage cells need a wide range of nutrients. So eating a healthful diet, getting more fruits and vegetables into our diet, and taking a multiple vitamin and mineral formula, and really trying to give that cartilage cell all those building blocks that it needs to build healthy cartilage.
Doctor, you were talking about side effects, and you know, we've all watched those TV ads that talk about all the potential side effects of a particular drug, and I think, why would anybody want to take that stuff? And a lot of times the list of side effects is longer than the actual ads. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Right.
So let's talk about some of those side effects that you were alluding to.
I think a great example of how powerful ads are, if we look at those ads for the sleeping pills, they're very good. You see the visual images of someone sleeping, and they look well-rested and refreshed, and they show them energetic, and then they list all the side effects. We're not listening to the side effects because we're seeing the image of what we want. And when we look at the side effects of sleeping pills, they're really very significant. There have now been 19 very well-done studies that have shown that taking sleeping pills dramatically increases the risk of an early death. They're associated with a 35% increased risk for cancer. They're also associated with an increased risk for other major causes of death. And they're associated with a 300% increased risk for dementia. So, again, it's a classic example of taking something and maybe feeling like it's doing something, but in the long term, what it's doing is it's robbing us of our health. And, you know, we don't suffer depression because we're lacking Prozac, and we don't develop insomnia because we need Lunesta, Ambien, or Halcyon. You know, there are key reasons why we suffer some of these common ailments, and they're largely being ignored.
Well, let me ask you about that, because, I mean, that's a very common thing that boomers have, is sleeplessness, especially us maybe postmenopausal women.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have occasional difficulty sleeping, what natural things would you recommend?
Well, there's a lot of things that can be helpful. What we found in looking at continuous blood sugar levels is that the major cause of sleep maintenance insomnia, that's the form of insomnia where people wake up after being asleep maybe 3, 4, or 5 hours and then have a hard time getting back to sleep, is a faulty blood sugar control. Insulin resistance is a term that's in the news a lot right now, and when people become insulin resistant, and if your waist is larger than your hips, you are likely insulin resistant. And when you have that insulin resistance, you're on what we call the blood sugar roller coaster. So faulty blood sugar control is really one of the key underlying features of poor sleep quality and sleep maintenance insomnia. So eating a low glycemic diet, staying away from foods that are going to quickly raise your blood sugar levels, and then really developing a strategy to stabilize that blood sugar level through supplementation and proper diet. That's really the biggest secret, I think, to helping people get a better night's sleep. There are a lot of natural sleep aids, melatonin, L-theanine, 5-HTP, valerian. There's a lot of things that we can use, but you know, it's always the best medicine to try and answer the question, what's causing this? Why am I not getting a good night's sleep? And what we found is that for most people, it's faulty blood sugar control.
Huh. So if we eat, like if we have a bowl of ice cream, we shouldn't have it at midnight. Maybe we should have it in the afternoon. Is that what you're saying? So
yeah, you know, many people are probably familiar with the glycemic index. This is a numerical value that's placed on food that indicates its impact on our blood sugar level. Getting familiar with the amount of carbohydrates that are safe for a particular meal or a 2 to 3 hour period is very important, particularly people that are trying to lose weight or are suffering from type 2 diabetes or insulin resistance.
That's food for thought, literally. We're talking with Dr. Michael Murray, an authority on natural medicine and treatments of common ailments. More when we return.
As a follow-on to our series, Beyond the Face of Alzheimer's, we'd like to let our listeners know about a new app developed by the University of Illinois at Chicago about dementia. The Dementia Guide mobile app has screening questions, resources, and management tips, which can provide invaluable information for caregivers and loved ones of persons with dementia.
The developers are looking for non-professionals to test the Dementia Guide mobile app and provide feedback. If interested in participating, please contact Dr. Valerie Gruss at 312-413-9000 or email vgruss, that's V-G-R-U-S-S, at uic.edu.
You're tuned in to the Two Boomer Babes. With us is naturopathic physician Dr. Michael Murray. Dr. Murray, you were just talking about blood sugar levels, so let's ask you about Avandia, and we were talking about side effects of certain drugs, and Avandia, which is used to treat type 2 diabetes. Tell us about those side effects or what alternatives there are.
With Avandia, the drug ended up increasing the risk of suffering a fatal heart attack by 64%. It's estimated that Avandia caused over 83,000 heart attacks. So it's just not the right approach. The right approach is, for most of these health conditions, is looking at the diet, the lifestyle, the attitude, and how we can support a person's physiology through natural approaches.
Okay, now let me ask you about osteoporosis, which many of us boomers, especially women, are, you know, very concerned about. So if we want to avoid osteoporosis, the full-blown osteoporosis, is there anything we can be doing naturally?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm very upset that a whole generation of women have basically been guinea pigs again. You know, these bisphosphonate drugs are not very effective. They have a long list of side effects, and the longer a woman takes them, the more likely they are to suffer a fracture because the drugs lead to the formation of brittle bones. There's a lot of great information on how we can improve bone health through diet, through lifestyle, and through proper supplementation. One of the major advances in bone health is looking beyond the mineral matrix. Our bone is composed of about 40% collagen. Collagen is to bone what 2x4s are in the frame of our house. So there's a lot of research being focused on how we can increase the collagen content of the bone, because if you increase that collagen content, you increase the number of bone mineral binding sites, you increase the flexibility of the bone, and you end up increasing the density of the bone as well. There have been studies with a form of silica called Biosil that showed that Biosil can increase the collagen content of the bone by 22% over the course of 1 year, and that also led to a significant increase in the bone mineral density as well. So I think that all the usual suspects are important in bone health. We're learning that it's beyond calcium. We need vitamin D as well. Most people aren't taking enough vitamin D. It looks like we need to be taking about 2,000 to 5,000 IUs per day. We're also learning that osteoporosis is another condition that's associated with increased inflammation in the body. So utilizing natural approaches such as the Mediterranean diet or eating more richly colored fruits and vegetables, getting more of these plant pigments in our diet can help prevent osteoporosis. We're learning that vitamin K is very critical because it helps that protein structure of the bone. And as I mentioned, there are supplements that can help beyond, D and calcium and magnesium and such. And Biosil is a great example of that.
Well, and we've been told, though, recently there have been studies about that calcium intake, which is a little bit alarming.
I think one of the problems with the conventional medical research is that they like to isolate one factor. The problem with nutrition is that nutritional factors work in harmony with other nutritional factors. And if you take any single nutrient at a superphysiological dose, you impair the use and utilization of other nutrients. So if we just supplement calcium, we're going to impair the absorption of other minerals, and we're going to cause harm. And that's what the research is showing, and that's something that I've been talking about for almost 30 years now and predicted it, and we're going to see more of it because there's so much data where the conventional medical community just, they're throwing a single nutrient at a very complex a condition like osteoporosis, and then they're seeing, well, it's really not helping that much, and it's causing some harm as well. So we have to take a more comprehensive approach to addressing these issues, and that includes not only even with supplementation, supplementing an array of important nutrients, but also looking at the role of diet, lifestyle, and our attitude. And osteoporosis is a great example of a condition that is really, really responsive to these natural approaches.
Dr. Michael Murray, naturopathic physician and author of What the Drug Companies Won't Tell You and Your Doctor Doesn't Know, you have really given us, babes, a lot to think about. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And if people want more information, they can go to my website, drmurray.com.
Up next, the scoop on women and our middle-age hormones. Stay with us. If you're a woman of a certain age, you've probably been told it's normal to be moody, gain weight, feel stressed out, lose interest in sex, and have an internal temperature equivalent to that in Death Valley. It's just natural aging, and we're going to have to learn to live with it. Or if we really can't take it, we can pop a prescription pill to try to relieve some of the symptoms. Sound familiar?
Harvard-trained gynecologist Dr. Sarah Gottfried says midlife doesn't have to be the beginning of a downward slide. We don't have to be miserable, and there are proactive things we can do. In her latest book, The Hormone Cure, Dr. Gottfried shows women how to adjust their hormones naturally to feel, get this, sexy, vital, and balanced. What a novel concept. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
What are the symptoms of a hormone imbalance?
Oh my gosh, how much time do we have? You know, the list is long. It includes trouble with sleep, hot flashes, night sweats, or Death Valley, as you just described it, feeling cranky, preferring to mop the floor than have sex with your husband. There's many, many, many symptoms. Feeling tired but wired, weight gain, they all fit under the heading of hormones.
I'm thinking to myself, check, 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 and check. Huh. Okay. But how can a woman determine if she has a hormone imbalance? Is there a blood test? How do they figure that one out?
There's many blood tests. You can also test your saliva and your urine. I actually find that one of the best ways to know if your root cause is hormonal for the symptoms that you have is to do a questionnaire. So I have a questionnaire that I've developed over the past 20 years, and I've used in 20,000 women. And I have a short version of it that I could give to our listeners for free today. Here's the URL. It's thehormonecurebook.com/quiz. thehormonecurebook.com/quiz. And it takes you through a short version of looking to see if you have certain hormones out of whack. And these are the hormones that are most important, especially to boomers. I call them your hormonal Charlie's Angels: cortisol, estrogen, and thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
Thyroid, we know about. That's the weight gain one, right?
Thyroid is weight gain. It's you know, there's this problem that I would call thyropause that many of us go through. There's many pauses, right? There's sexopause, menopause, thyropause, andropause. Thyropause is linked both to weight gain and also to a few other things, fatigue, hair loss, and depression. So we know that 20% of people who struggle with depression have a slow thyroid. 50% of people who struggle with depression have high cortisol levels. That's the main stress hormone. So I think of thyroid a little broader than just weight. Mm-hmm. But you are correct that it is the hormone in charge of your metabolism, or how fast or how slowly you burn calories.
Okay, so say we have a hormone imbalance. What are the first steps we can take to try to balance it all out?
Well, I would say the priority first is to figure out the root cause of the symptoms that you have. So I've got a questionnaire in my book that people can take. It's actually got 128 questions in the form of a checklist. And then that tells you which chapter to go to. So very commonly, women have a problem with cortisol, high cortisol, and it's the reason why they feel tired but wired, can't sleep at night, maybe have high blood pressure, maybe have memory issues. And then you go to chapter 4 of my book. So that's an example of how you can figure out if you have a hormone imbalance. You can also, you know, what I would say in terms of turning the ship around and stepping into the grace of hormone balance again, I think it's important to look at the way that you eat, move, think, and supplement. Because I think women especially have been offered the latest pharmaceutical for pretty much every problem that we have, whether it's sleeping issues, anxiety, depression, and I want to change that. I think we've got to change the conversation about hormones. We've got to look at, okay, what are the nutritional gaps that you have? What are the lifestyle tweaks that we can make so that we get your hormones into balance?
You're tuned into the Two Boomer Babes Radio Hour, and we're speaking with Dr. Sarah Gottfried about strategies to help women get our middle-age hormones back on track. Her book is called The Hormone Cure. Now, Dr. Gottfried, you were just talking about good nutrition, but let me ask you about, you know, yes, we should eat right, but what about, as you said, a symptom of hormone imbalance is weight gain, you know, which is so common for us menopausal women, with the exception of Kathy here. But it seems that no matter how little we eat, the pounds just keep piling on and our waist keeps getting thicker. And, you know, in my case especially, I crave starchy and sugar-loaded foods and I can't get enough of them.
Yeah.
So how do we get that back on track?
I'm not actually talking about restricting more. I'm not a fan of this ridiculous idea that you need to eat less and exercise more. I would say what we want to do is we want to eat smarter mm-hmm. and exercise smarter. So if we take, for instance, the problem of sugar cravings and craving the starchy, sugary foods that you just described, often the root cause is that your cortisol is too high. So cortisol is that stress hormone. We know that when it's too high, it especially makes you pile on the belly fat. So I don't know if any of our listeners know what I'm talking about, but the muffin top, we're talking about the, you know, kind of the menopausal muffin top.
We know what you're talking about.
Okay, good. Just wanted to make sure. So we know that when you get your cortisol into the normal range, it makes those sugar cravings disappear.
Okay, so how do you do that?
What's
the formula?
So let me give you a few strategies. These are the things that I did going back more than 10 years ago, that got my cortisol into the normal zone. So I started taking a supplement called phosphatidylserine. Phosphatidylserine. The great thing about Google is that no matter how you spell it, you'll probably find it. And the idea here is 400 milligrams has been shown with the best evidence to lower your cortisol level. And the bonus prize is that you increase your lean body mass. So you lose fat. It also improves your mood because cortisol robs you of the happy brain chemicals. It robs you of serotonin, which is such an important neurotransmitter in charge of your appetite, your mood, and your sleep. So we've got to get these things. It's so important to get your cortisol into the normal range. Another thing that happens for women who have high cortisol at night and they have trouble winding down, they're just thinking about, you know, the 17 things they're trying to manage. What really helps there is a supplement called Relora. So those are a couple of things that I find that work really well. Another proven supplement is fish oil or omega-3s. We know that somewhere between about 2,000 and 4,000 milligrams a day also lowers your cortisol. It helps you become more sensitive to insulin, because a key problem here, if you have high cortisol, is that it makes you insulin resistant, which is where your cells become numb to insulin. We don't want that. That makes you pile on the fat.
Does that also help with low libido, which, you know, which I love when you said women would rather mop the floor than have sex with their partner?
Well, it's interesting. I find that low libido is one of the more complicated symptoms that I work with. You know, it's not like there's just one answer across the board for all women. And, of course, your relationship is a big part of this, too. But here's what I find. 70% of low libido is hormonal. 70%. Now, some women hate their husbands, and that's, you know, that's like another conversation. But in terms of the hormonal causes of low libido, we know that high cortisol is a common reason. We also know that the slow thyroid, so these are now two of those hormonal Charlie's Angels, the slow thyroid can make you less interested in sex. And then finally, this third hormonal Charlie's Angel, your estrogen. When estrogen goes down, a lot of women just don't feel juicy. They don't feel juicy in their joints. Their vagina becomes like Death Valley. We're maybe overusing this Death Valley analogy today, but it applies to the vagina as well. So those are all reasons for low libido that we can address, and you can address them with a non-drug formula.
And what's that?
So we just went through some of the strategies that work for high cortisol. When I see people with a slow thyroid, you know, I have this protocol that I've developed where you use three different steps to address your hormone issues. The first step is that you fill in the nutritional gaps and make the targeted lifestyle changes, such as the ones I just described for cortisol. The second step is to take a proven botanical. So if you have high cortisol, for instance, that would be rhodiola, very well proven with the best evidence, randomized trials, to be effective for high cortisol. We also know that maca is very effective when your estrogen is low. It's been shown to reduce depression and raise libido. And then the third step is bioidentical hormones, but at the lowest doses and for the shortest duration, and only if those previous two steps don't work. So when it comes to the slow thyroid, if we just do step one, there's certain nutrients that a lot of women are missing: copper, zinc, selenium, vitamin D, iodine. And those are the kind of gaps that you want to fill in as a first step towards fixing your thyroid if it's slow. You know, I think so many women will go to their doctor, they'll ask to be tested for their thyroid, and then they get a knee-jerk response, which is, why don't you take this prescription? And that's what I want to change. I want to look at these really important nutritional gaps and other things that you can do that don't involve pharmaceutical to get your hormones in balance.
Now, what about the brain fog issues, which so many middle-aged women really experience? Can you give us help with that in a nutshell?
Oh, yes. Well, a couple of reasons for brain fog. And once again, all paths lead back to cortisol. So high cortisol is a key reason why people have brain fog. What happens is high cortisol shrinks your brain. It shrinks your hippocampus, which is that part of the brain where you integrate memory. You need your hippocampus. You need it to be lovely and active, and high cortisol will rob you of that. We also know that a slow thyroid will cause brain fog, especially in the morning. You know, if you have a hard time getting going in the morning, maybe you feel like you need a cup of coffee just to kind of clear your head, think thyroid. Get your thyroid tested. And we're not talking about kind of the old school way of testing your thyroid. We're talking about looking at the optimal range for you, And I give those ranges in my book, The Hormone Cure.
Well, there's so much to talk about, but unfortunately we're out of time. Dr. Sarah Gottfried, author of The Hormone Cure, thanks so much for sharing this great info that we're all too familiar with.
Oh, thank you so much, Kathy and Barb. So great to be with you.
Up next, shoot the breeze with a bluesy babe.
Bailey
Don't touch
Chase
that dial.
Offers a lifestyle of flexibility and choice that provides you new opportunities to experience your independence and enrich your life. For more information about the lifestyle Bailey Chase offers, visit www.integrace.org. Equal housing opportunity.
Support comes from Accent on Travel Rehoboth Beach with a Viking Rhine River cruise with us, the two Boomer Babes. For questions and reservations, 302-703-6154.
As a follow-on to our series, Beyond the Face of Alzheimer's, we'd like to let our listeners know about a new app developed by the University of Illinois at Chicago about dementia. The Dementia Guide mobile app has screening questions, resources, and management tips, which can provide invaluable information for caregivers and loved ones of persons with dementia.
The developers are looking for non-professionals to test the Dementia Guide mobile app and provide feedback. If interested in participating, please contact Dr. Valerie Gruss at 312-413-9000 or email vgruss, that's V-G-R-U-S-S, at uic.edu.
This is the news. This morning, we are saluting the 2.2 million women who have joined in the war effort. They now make up 37% of the workforce, changing their role forever.
The prestigious Harvard Medical School is breaking ground today, opening its doors to new female applicants.
Today, little girls all over the world look to the sky, where the first woman is now in space.
Military stereotypes are challenged today with the trailblazing promotion of a U.S. female officer to four-star general. It was just announced that the vast majority of last year's doctorate degrees were earned by women.
We've come so far, but our news is changing for the worse. More women die from heart disease and stroke than men, even though it can be prevented. Make a change at GoRedForWomen.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women.
Who might you save?
Your mother, your father, your husband, uncle, and son.
Learn FAST, F-A-S-T, the sudden signs of a stroke, and you could save
your friend, your best friend, teacher, boss, coach.
F, face drooping, A, arm weakness, S, speech difficulty, T, time to call 911. F-A-S-T, face, arm, speech, time. That's F, face drooping, A, arm weakness, S, speech difficulty, T, time to call 911. The sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment, and that can make a remarkable difference in the recovery of
your neighbor, the waiter, a fellow shopper, a total stranger, grandmother, grandfather.
So learn FAST, the sudden signs of a stroke, then pass it on, because you never know who might save you.
Your wife, your colleague, teammate, mother.
Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
If you're a fan of singing the blues, our next guest just might tickle your fancy. Angela Straley, together with Tracy Nelson, Annie Sampson, and Dorothy Nelson, have had long careers in the music industry and have been associated with the likes of Van Morrison, Muddy Waters, and Linda Ronstadt.
These four talented boomer babes now combine blues, gospel, and jazz with the launch of the Blues Broads. Their ringleader, Angela Straley, joins us from L.A. to shoot the breeze about life as a bluesy boomer. Welcome, Angela.
Hi there.
Great
to be
here. Now, quickly, how did you broads get together? I mean, after all, you each have your own kind of sound and style, jazz, gospel, blues. So how did you get together?
Well, it happened sort of naturally. Tracy and I started doing gigs together out here on the West Coast, actually north of San Francisco. And then we invited our friend Annie to join us on a fun occasion that we do once a year at Rancho Nicasio. It's a barbecue. And so then when we met Dorothy Morrison and convinced her that she should come out and hear us and maybe she'd want to join us, you know, just for fun, and we started doing that, and it was such a great combination of personalities and musically also that we said, gee, we should take this more seriously.
We love the name Blues Broads. You know, it's really got a lot of attitude. So what genius came up with that one?
Actually, that was my husband, Bob Brown.
Oh,
And almost everybody loves that name, and we do too. Nobody's ever come up with a better name for us, that's for sure. And we like the humor in it and the confidence that it shows, and we have a lot of fun together. So,
well, Angela, now that you girls are boomer babes of a certain age, mm-hmm. I mean, let me ask you, is touring and keeping up such a huge travel schedule, it might not be quite as easy as when you were in your 20s. Is that the case?
You bet. But I think all of us really take good care of ourselves. And, you know, we eat good food and we exercise and we're all in good shape.
Well, Angela, do you kind of feel a little less pressure at this stage of life? I mean, launching this big new musical career, do you feel a little bit less like, I'm going to just enjoy the ride? I don't really have anything to prove.
Absolutely. You nailed it. You nailed it right there, because we don't. Like I said, we all enjoyed our own careers, our own separate careers. So this is just something new for us that came at the right time. Everybody was at a point where we could at least devote some time to this project.
Isn't it great to be a certain age? I'm telling you, it's so empowering.
Absolutely. We do feel really confident about our music, and we just feel like this is a new lease on life to get up on stage with each other and do something, you know, that people just fall down for, and it's nothing but fun for us.
Well, Angela, quickly tell us about the song we're going to hear as we close. And we hear you start every show with this one.
Okay, this is Living the Blues, and this is a song that's an original by Tracy Nelson. So we just love to begin our shows with this song because it's such a great blues groove, just gets everybody kind of settled down and in the groove. So and the words are funny, as you notice.
They're very funny. You wake up with a wet pillow in the morning, we hear.
Which just happened this morning, Angela.
Okay.
Well, Angela Straley, ringleader of the Blues Broads, thanks so much for shooting the breeze with the babes. We can't wait to hit one of your concerts.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so nice to talk to you.
Bailey Chase offers a lifestyle of flexibility and choice that provides you new opportunities to experience your independence and enrich your life. For more information about the lifestyle Bailey Chase offers, visit www.integrace.org. Equal Housing Opportunity.
With the legalization of cannabis, a.k.a. marijuana, Colorado tourism has gone positively sky high, if you get our drift. Joining us to shoot the breeze about how some businesses are cashing in on a soaring market is Dale Dyke, owner of Get High Getaways in Denver, Colorado. Welcome, Dale.
Hey, thanks.
So, Dale, we understand you opened a B&B catering to the cannabis crowd. So when did you realize that this was really a fabulous opportunity?
Well, this was really all my wife's idea. And, you know, we saw this well over a year ago, and there was just a lot going on, you know, a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement about everybody getting started and trying to find their niche. You know, there's a lot of people who are very excited and, you know, wanting to be involved. And we thought that we wanted to provide a car service because that was the one thing that people were most concerned about, was that there would be an added influx of intoxicated drivers.
Okay. Well, Dale, tell us about your typical customer, the person that stays at the inn. I mean, are they like pretty laid back and chill? Do they say dude a lot?
Unfortunately, I think we all do. Basically what's turned out to be our typical traveler has been the single, what we call a scout traveler. You know, it seems like all the tribes all over the country are sending out their scouts, and they're coming out to check us out, and they're looking and seeing, and they're going back and telling their friends.
So do you get lots of boomers staying at your inn?
Most of the people have been more of that age. We've only had just a very small handful of younger travelers.
Now, Dale, you said that you offer a car service for the people that stay at your inn. It's a B&B, so you serve breakfast, I assume.
Yes, we do.
So do you have little scones, and do they have additives, or do you have, like, brownies with afternoon tea? That kind of thing?
Well, you know, oddly enough, we do usually, while people are here, not every time, but it's not unusual for us to make a batch of chocolate chip cookies, you know, in the evening when we have guests. And that's kind of our version of a mint on your pillow, is a medicated chocolate chip cookie.
So do you grow your own pot, Dale?
Yes, we do. We have an indoor little garden here in the house, and then we have a greenhouse in the backyard. And we produce everything that we could possibly smoke. And we have patients as well under the medical program. And we provide, you know, pretty much as they want for free.
So as far as your guests, can they have an unlimited quantity of pot that you grow?
Well, not officially, no. We don't officially supply anything to our customers. They're able to go out into the dispensaries and buy anything they want and come back here and use that however they see fit. But like we mentioned before, we have our own garden and we have our own supply. And so, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, when you come to our house, you're going to be offered marijuana because, you know, we use marijuana all the time. And so if you're here, I don't care if you're, you know, Lakewood's finest who comes and knocks on the door and is just having a casual conversation with us, it's just like offering somebody a glass of water. You know, it's just a common courtesy. If you have it, then you share it.
Well, Dale, you mentioned the dispensaries that have popped up all over. What are prices like?
The recreational prices are just a little out of hand, but they're working on that. So for your traveler coming in from out of state, they are going to be paying a premium price and with a premium tax. Most people say, you know, when they're in the dispensaries and they're paying what I consider to be very high prices and very high taxes, what the people always say is, well, it's still no more expensive than what I pay back at home on the black market. So most travelers don't have any problem with it at all.
But I mean, are you talking $100, $10?
A common sale to a recreational user, tourist, would be a gram of weed of a very high quality. And it's usually about $20 plus 28% tax. And then when you move up to, you know, your common 3.5 gram eighth bag, then, you know, you're looking at $60 plus tax.
Are you very busy these days? Has your business seen a lot of growth?
Well, we're just trying to keep up with being as good as we can be. We're just a 2-bedroom bed and breakfast on the west side. You know, we're really not very large at all. We've had an incredible demand because, like I say, our big thing is we pick you up at the airport in the Mercedes. We bring you back to the house. We cater to you. We do everything we possibly can for you. And then we chauffeur drive you everywhere you want to go the whole time you're here.
Dale Dyke, owner of Get High Getaways, talk about seizing an opportunity. Thanks so much for joining the Two Boomer Babes.
Thank you very much.
Support comes from Accent on Travel, Rehoboth Beach, with a Viking Rhine River cruise with us, the Two Boomer Babes. For questions and reservations, 302-703-6154. And now it's time for us babes to give credit where credit is due.
Audio and technical guru Julio Gonzalez, who magically pulls it all together.
Webmaster wizard Gail Jane, who makes twoboomerbabes.com a fab place to visit.
Founding members of the Chicago chapter of the Two Boomer Babes Supper Club, Mike and Larry Israel, for your unfailing love and support.
Our husbands, daughters, family, and friends, even with smirks and eye rolls, who encourage us all the way.
And give us great material, often without knowing it.
Our moms and upstairs directors, Jane and Sally, who are cheering us on from their bridge game in the sky.
Our home away from home, Delmarva Public Radio. And to you, our listeners, for joining us each week and spurring us on.
Two Boomer Babes is a production of Two Boomer Babes Media in collaboration with Zymer Communications.